Hey, boss lady, what are you doing with your power now that you've got it? I'm Christy Atwater.
And I'm Andrea Gigline. On this episode of Hey, Boss Lady, we talked to Nevada Congresswoman Susie Lee, one of the wave of women who went to Washington in a historic election in 2018.
It was historic, and right on the heels of the Me Too movement, which opened a lot of eyes to the present-day issues still facing women in every facet of professional life.
We're going to talk to her about that. But first, we should note, we recorded this the morning of January 6th, the day that Congress was assembled to vote on certifying the election of Joe Biden as our next president. We all know what happened later that day.
That's for sure. Protesters rioted, sessions came to a halt, and lawmakers, including Susie Lee, had to leave the floor to avoid the mayhem. It was a day that shocked the nation. But that's a story for another time. Today, we're going to talk about why Congresswoman Lee went to Washington and what she's doing there for women.
Let's bring in our guest into the conversation. Representative Lee, welcome.
Well, thank you. It's great to be with you and great to be talking about equality on this historic day as we get closer to swearing in our first female vice president.
Yes, and now I'd like to actually take you back because I think this change has been in the works for a while. You and almost 100 other women went to Washington 2 years ago. Since then, a lot has happened for women. Let's talk about that.
Well, listen, I mean, first of all, I reign from the state of Nevada, which has led the way with the first woman majority state legislature. We have a woman majority Supreme Court and a woman majority in our congressional delegation. And so what we have seen is a recognition that representation matters.
Yes.
And
yes.
It matters in positions of power. 2 years ago, we were faced with the Me Too movement, which really shined a light on the obstacles that women overcome on a daily basis. But we have a lot to look forward to. I'm looking forward. You know, we made a lot of progress. Obviously, much of it has been stopped in the Senate. So I'm looking forward to continuing that work.
And, you know, Susie, I want our listeners to really focus on when we say a female majority, it doesn't mean it is all one party. It just means that the gender is now represented in an equal part. And I think that that's an important thing for people to understand, that the work of working together now has the potential of that greater voice. And so the question that I want to present to you, because knowing that gender equity has always been an issue for you because you have always been in public service one way or the other, what was the impetus? What spurred that in you?
Well, Andrea, as you know, I am one of 8 children, 7 of them being women.
Wow.
And girls at one point, now we're
yes.
women.
Yep.
And, you know, basically I had parents and I don't necessarily think that I think it was more out of economic necessity. My mom and dad looking at 7 women and 7 girls and thinking they have to make a living.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
so
yes.
it was really about our independence and making sure. And honestly, I think it was out of necessity, too. I mean,
sure.
with 8
sure.
kids, you have to be independent. But, basically it was, you know, having parents who instilled in us that there were no barriers and that we could do anything and we could achieve anything if we worked hard enough.
So apparently when you were in college, your father, who was an engineer in the factories, lost his job. What happened and how did that affect you?
You know, I was a sophomore in college. It was an incredibly stressful time for our family.
Hmm.
My father, you know, I was putting myself through school at Carnegie Mellon University. My father lost his job. He was at the age of 56. He was working in a steel company in Ohio. It was during the Rust Belt bust. And, it affected me in several ways. One is, it made me even more independent knowing that I had no
yeah.
safety net to fall back onto. But more importantly, I watched my parents struggle into their golden years, which weren't necessarily golden. My father, you know, they both did not, they didn't have health insurance because they were they weren't quite 65 yet.
Mm-hmm.
My mother suffered a heart attack literally a month before she qualified, before she turned 65 and qualified for Medicare.
Mm.
They almost lost their house because of their hospital bill.
Yep.
And, you know, so living through those experiences and then honestly watching my father suffer through depression and never being able to quite get the same level of employment back.
Yes.
And when I think about what's happening to so many Nevadans today because of this pandemic, people who have been working professionally, whether they're stagehands or waitresses or waiters, you know, working in our economy, in our tourism-based economy, to me, that's, you know, that drives my work here in Washington to make sure that I'm doing whatever I can to make sure they and their families get back on their feet.
Right. You know, Susie, there are so many eye-opening moments in your life and your experience that I can really see sitting here how you decided to do certain things. There was a point where you transitioned out of your regular employment, and I think it was when you came to Nevada all these years ago. You went into community service with our schools. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
What's driven my community service was really, you know, that experience when my father lost his job.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, there were people who stepped up and helped me out at key moments in my life. And I always say you're going up and down the ladder of opportunity in life. And sometimes you're at the bottom and you're reaching your hand up and you need someone to pull you up. And other times you're at the top.
Yes.
And I think it's your responsibility to reach down and help others.
Yeah.
And I had an incredible mentor. His name was Bob Casey. At the time, I was working three jobs at school. I worked at the library and the cafeteria, and I taught aerobics. And he gave me an opportunity of employment. And that really set to me, and, you know, he made me make a commitment that at a time in my life when I'd be in a position to help others, that I needed to turn around and do the same. And so that's really what was my driving moment, you know, my drive to get into public service. But, you know, getting here in Nevada, as we all know, we suffer. Our education system ranks among the lowest in the country.
Right.
And knowing just how incredibly important education was to me and my opportunities in life, that's really what set me on my course of making sure I did what I could to invest to help those young kids. And, you know, my first involvement in the school system was with the Inner City Games, which is an after school. Now it's the after school All-Stars.
Right.
But it really was driven towards giving kids that hook to keeping them in school through extracurricular activities, whether it's chess or dance or broadcasting or obviously sports. To me, that was what kept me involved in school, and that's what offered me so many opportunities. So it was a great way for me to get started in the community in Vegas.
So how does one go from community service to a politician?
Yes,
a successful elected politician. I mean, you know, and even maybe even start smaller, like, you know, I have historically not been super involved in politics. What would someone do to start getting more involved?
You know, that's actually a great question because to me, it's all intertwined. And when you do nonprofit work, whether it was with the After School All-Stars or most recent, you know, I started a homeless center and then I ran communities and schools, which is a dropout prevention. You can make an impact in people's lives. And I have so much respect for people who get involved in our community. But you also see that there are systemic barriers that exist, and whether it's a livable minimum wage, affordable housing, affordable health care. I mean, these are all barriers. When we look at the education system and the impact that poverty has on student achievement, you have to start to say, what is it that we are going to do to get students out of poverty? And to me, it's just a natural it was a natural progression for my work within the community to look at what's happening in the halls of Washington that are keeping people from accessing it, you know, having equitable access to opportunity. I'm going to just say on the heels of the, I wouldn't say Me Too movement at that point, but I really made the decision to run for Congress in 2016. I ran in an unsuccessful primary in 2016.
Right.
And it was at the time that Planned Parenthood was under attack, if you'll recall.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And you know, women's access to health care was under attack. And to me, it was my friends who I had, you know, become friends with through my work in nonprofits, who turned to me for guidance on how do we get involved.
Right.
And that gave me sort of the confidence and the push to put my name on the ballot and get out there and run for office.
You know, Susie, what I hear throughout this conversation this morning really makes me understand also why you strive to be so collaborative. From, you know, the touch point where Bob Casey was that, you know, instilled in you, planted a seed in your mind about the giving back concept, and then how you've evolved it in each one of the things that you've explained, it was about making sure that someone or groups of someone got what they needed in order to move forward. And those pieces all got put together. So I want to ask, you know, this path has been long and not straight by a long shot. Have there been surprises for you along the way?
Yeah, I mean, there's been obviously being sworn in during a government shutdown, being a member of Congress at the time that Donald Trump was president. There were surprises along the way quite a bit. The shut down the impeachment. I remember January 3rd, a year ago, the Iran, you know, the Soleimani attack, and then the pending repercussions of that. Mm-hmm. And of course, most importantly, this pandemic. And so every step of the way, it was you run for office thinking, I'm going to spend all this time, I'm going to pass this great legislation, I'm going to help people. And then you're putting out fires one after another. I will say that some of the pleasant surprises have been, one is, you know, I think Congress in general has a bad reputation across the country, as we know. Our favorability is quite low. And I must say, I have been incredibly impressed by the caliber of my colleagues on both sides of the aisle.
That's lovely.
And a recognition that even though we might be ideologically opposed on different issues, that, you know, they were elected by their neighbors.
Sure.
And they were elected by their constituents as well. And so I think that's been a pleasant surprise. And then the other thing that's been great about running for office, I think we're going to talk a little bit later about encouraging other people to do that, is, gosh, it opens up your horizon so much.
Yes.
To be able to meet so many incredible people in our community who are doing great work, whether they're running a food bank or, you know, I mean, I just, we had a horrific accident on with bicyclists, you know, mm-hmm. we have many great people working for bicycle safety. You know, I mean, there's so many great people doing incredible work, immigration work in our community. And so that's been a great surprise, is being able to see and meet all of these people that are experts in their own right and doing incredible work on the ground.
Yeah, I think that's in particular, you know, I'm proud of our state of Nevada, because I think I've seen over and over again how the people of Nevada come together and help those in need. I actually, a friend of mine, her husband was in that cycle accident and sadly passed away. So it was a horrible thing.
And I will tell you one of the good things that happened within days, which does happen in a small state. I was in a traffic jam on West Charleston and could not figure out what was happening. There were these lineup of police, and everyone in the left-hand, the right-hand lane appeared to be being pulled over. And what it was that they had a police officer who was a decoy cyclist. And if you were violating the bike path, so we quickly worked to educate and show people in present time how accidents happened. And that's, I think, one of the flexibility points of having a small state as we do.
I agree. I think, you know, the great thing about Nevada is, first of all, we're such a transient community. Many of us have moved here from other communities, and, you know, we rely on each other as our quote-unquote family. Mm-hmm. And more importantly, you don't need permission to get involved. It's such a small state that
it's
if
true.
You show up and you work yeah. and you're present, you have access to make a difference. And I think that's an important and one of the things I love most about our state.
Okay, one thing I gotta ask, because I'm so curious about politics and why I've always shied away from it. How do you handle the public scrutiny? How do you handle the media attention? It's not all positive.
Well,
I'm sure you know that.
I don't watch a lot of TV.
Yeah.
That's probably number one. You have to understand it is an honor and a privilege to have the trust and responsibility that people have placed in me to stand up and be their voice.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, and so when things get tough, when you're under public scrutiny, first of all, you know, there's different types of scrutiny, right? And
mm-hmm.
there's scrutiny that is, I think, straightforward, and you, I think it's part of the job.
Right.
There's unfair scrutiny,
yes.
which is an unfortunate part of politics. But in those times when things get tough, I think it, for me, it's most important to think about people who I'm fighting for
yeah.
and think that, you know, this might be tough, but, you know, especially now if you're a single parent at home, dealing with trying to get to work. You have three different students doing online learning at
mm-hmm.
home. You know, the fear of catching COVID. I mean, those stresses are real.
Yeah.
And you know, those are things that's why I'm here is
yep.
to fight to make sure that people like that and people in my community, my constituents, have a representative who understands them, who's going to fight to make sure that they have, you know, they have the
yeah.
opportunity to live a dignified, full life and give their children a great future.
So basically, you handle the public scrutiny by staying totally focused on why you're there and who you're there for. So from there, I want to, you know, ask, what advice do you have for younger women or women in general? Just entering the professional world, like what's the advice you would give them?
My advice to women is demand what you deserve and don't ask for permission. And then if you fall down, pick yourself up and try again. And, you know, one of the valuable lessons I learned, you know, I ran in a primary in 2016. And when that was over, I was like, there is no way in hell I'm ever doing this again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will never do it again. And I must say, Catherine Cortez Masto, who's having an incredible day today because she was the head of the Democratic Senate Senatorial Campaign Committee. But she picked up the phone and was the first. No one calls you when you lose, by
right.
the way.
Right,
and
right.
she was the first person to call me and said, don't give up. You know, so
fabulous.
Many women, when they lose, they don't do it again. And if you look historically, especially in politics, if women run the first time, they generally don't run the second time. So my advice to people is you might get a roadblock put, especially women, in your way, and figure out how to get past that.
What's your greatest hope for the future?
Oh, my goodness. You know, listen, I mean, we have so many existential threats. I think most importantly that we get, that we obviously we got to leave a world that is inhabitable to our children.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think climate change is the most existential threat that we face. And I'm very excited that we have a president who believes in the science, a president-elect who believes in the science. And so I'm looking forward to working with him to make sure that we take credible steps that will combat climate change and reverse the course.
Right.
But, you know, I think my hope for the future of Congress is that we do work together and that we are not, that this doesn't become a body that is, you have to have all three arms of government to get something done.
Mm-hmm.
That we learn, you know, that, you know, we're not just representing half of society, that we're representing everyone.
That's great.
And that we can work together to create enduring policy. And that we don't spend time, you know, that we spend time, obviously you're going to have your disagreements, there's ebbs and flows, but that you promote some policy that is really created through compromise so that it can endure.
Yeah.
And I think that's my greatest wish as being a member of Congress, that I can be a positive force in that respect.
Well, I do appreciate that, Susie. Susie, thank you so much for joining us today. Susie Lee is the 3rd District Representative for the state of Nevada in Congress. It was a delight to have you on the program. I'm Andrea Gigline.
And I'm Christy Atwater, and this is Hey Boss Lady.